So let's turn our attention to the message for today. And just to give you a little bit of a context, because I think it's always important to understand, why did somebody write the things that they did in the Bible? Because it's not like they sat down one day and said, well, I was just thinking about something and I thought they would, you know, I would send this to you. There was a reason. And the Apostle Paul writes this letter that we call Galatians to people that he has known, people that he cares about. And he went to this region of modern-day Turkey called Galatia back then. And he talked about the Jesus who came, who lived the life that we never could, who died on the cross in our place, who rose again from the dead, and people became followers of Jesus. They put their hope and their trust in him, and then Paul went on to another part of the Roman Empire, and he did that same thing all over again. Well, after Paul left, some teachers came behind him, and they said, you know, Paul gave you a good starting point, but that's, you know, kind of what gets you across the starting line, but we're here to how to tell you how to run the rest of the race. And there's a lot of things he left out, and we're here to tell you what all of that is. And part of what was taught was the idea that, yeah, you can be made right with God through the grace of God, but then to really spiritually mature and change, now you need to get busy. So we asked this question right up front, you know, how do people really deeply spiritually change? How does that happen? Where does the power to change come from? And I'm going to ask you a question here, and this is a question that's going to require a lot of courage on your part to be able to lift your hand up on that. How many people would be willing to say you've ever tried a diet in your life? Anybody courageous enough to acknowledge that? The rest of you, we know you're lying. Come on, you're in church. You're in church now. I think we've all tried it. I have. And here's the thing about diets. They work for a while, right? Because there is this moment in which you're like, oh man, that key lime pie is so good, and I'm not going to let it pass me by. Or you get invited over to somebody's house, and they don't have the things that are on the approved list, and then you don't want to offend them, and so you do that. And I think the story universally goes the same. It works for a while, but then it doesn't. And it seems like in no time, we're right back to where we started. What's up with diets? They're about willpower, right? Just say no. Just say no to all the good things and say yes to all the stuff that I can't stand and doesn't taste good. And after a while, it just doesn't work. And here's what we want to say right up front. Willpower will not power lasting change. It doesn't work. It doesn't get it done. And here's why we talk about that, because those teachers who came behind Paul were saying, yeah, God's grace is good. He got you to the starting line and even, you know, fired the gun and now you're off and running. But now it's up to you. And there's a long list of things that you got to do. And if you want to spiritually mature and move ahead, there's a whole lot of things you need to get busy with. You know, you boil down all spiritual pursuits in this world, and really, there's only two models, two roads, two paths you can take. And it can come with a lot of different names that are attached to it, but we're going to call one of those approaches today the temple model. And there are some, Tim Keller is a pastor and an author, has talked a lot about that, but so have others. And then there's also the grace models. And I got to tell you, the world over, that's it. One of two different models, one of two different ways. Some of the defining characteristics of the temple model, there's a sacred place, somewhere where you have to go to meet together with God. God's presence resides in a specific place, and so if you want to meet with God, you got to go there. And in the sacred place, there are sacred rules. And even, in fact, to get there, you have to follow some rules. And while you're there, you have to follow some rules as well. Otherwise, you are not permitted into the sacred place. Well, who decides that? Well, there are sacred authorities who define those rules, break them down, and instruct about them. And what does that result in? And that's not sacred now, it's scared followers, because you never know if you've done it good enough. And you're always living with this constant sense of tension. Did I do enough? Did I do it right? Did I listen enough? And I know that I haven't done it perfectly, and so where does that leave me? And it leaves us uncertain. Well, on the other side, there's a grace model, and we've already talked about some of the things that Paul talked about earlier in this letter called Galatians. And he said, you know who we are? And you know where we stand? We are hopelessly lost. And the God rescued us. And he doesn't say, you know, God met us halfway. He says we were lost and God rescued us. We're like the drowning person who had no shot to save themselves, but God rescued us. And along with that, God alone rescues. That's not something we can do. God does for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And really, there's the grace model. And it is diametrically opposed to the temple model. Now, I want to realize that in the Old Testament, it talks about the temple. And when God established the temple in what we call the Old Testament, it was not designed to be this. This is what people made it. God's intention was good, but people turned it into our efforts to work our way into God's good graces. And by contrast, Paul talks about this. We're lost. God rescued us. And now he's going to talk about the dynamics of change. How do people actually change? And yet the bottom line of these two models, again, very diametrically opposed. In the temple model, I obey, therefore, so I am accepted. Right? I've done enough. I've done it right. I've been serious enough. I've applied myself. Therefore, God accepts me. And on the other side, in the grace model, I'm accepted. I'm loved unconditionally by a holy God. There's a God who has not taken vengeance on me, as Pastor Jimmy was helping us understand. He has not even given us justice. He didn't give us what we deserve. Thank goodness. He gives us grace. And if you heard that story before about adopting the person who murdered your child, there's a part of me that goes, oh, that seems so over the top. That's what grace is. And the minute we lose sight that we're like that adopted one, we can so easily buy into the other system that tells us that it's all up to me at the end of the day. And because I'm accepted, therefore, so I obey. And we talk a lot about grace in this series. One important distinction is that obedience to God is not legalism. Legalism is me believing that my efforts earn my way into God's good graces. Obedience is the response to a God who has come to the rescue. He says, I want to lead you toward life, and I'll point you in all kinds of directions that lead you toward life. And the moment we say, yep, I've got some choices, I'm going to choose to obey God in this, that's the right response. And so we're not talking about, hey, do whatever you please. Obedience to the directions of God as a response to the grace that has been given leads us toward life. And here's why this picture is really important, because here's how the Apostle Paul begins chapter 3 of Galatians. Oh, foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you? And the word bewitched can mean beguile, who has cast a spell on you. And isn't there something beguiling? Isn't there something attractive about the temple model where you think, yeah, here are the things to do. Here is the list. Here are the ways in which you can move forward in your spiritual life. And who doesn't want to do that? I think anybody who's put their hope and trust in Jesus wonders, how do I now journey together with him? And Paul says, but I got to tell you, you bought into something that is not the real deal. Something that was never intended to be a part of a relationship together with the Jesus of the Bible. Here's how he goes on to describe it in the verses that follow. Then we're going to break this down a little bit. It was before your eyes that Jesus Christ was publicly portrayed as crucified. Let me ask you only this. Did you receive the Spirit by works of the law or by hearing with faith? Are you so foolish, having begun by the Spirit? Are you now being perfected by the flesh? Did you suffer so many things in vain, if indeed it was in vain? Does he who supplies a spirit to you and works miracles among you do so by works of the law or by hearing with faith? And do you see that contrast of the works of the law versus hearing by faith, by the grace that is found in Jesus? So Paul, what are you saying? What's the alternative then? Where does the power to change come from? And there's three things that he mentions for us. First comes by realizing what I already have. what I already have. Oftentimes we're told, here are the things you need to do to go discover something that you don't have. And if you've ever heard a promise like this, I would just caution you, this is a waving yellow flag anytime you hear something that goes like this. That if you reach the next level of spirituality, you will be able to hear the voice of God in ways that other people can't. Or if you reach that next plane of spirituality, you can pray for people who are sick and God's going to heal because of who you are and because of what you've done. And that's a dangerous place to be. Because the reality is, everything that we need is found in a relationship with Jesus. And there's nothing that we can add to that. We've already been given all that we need through the grace of God. To illustrate that, I want to take us to a source of deep theological truth and understanding. It's called The Wizard of Oz. And I think you've probably all seen this movie in one form or fashion, right? There's Dorothy, and she wants to get back to Kansas, and you know, one person needs some courage, and one person needs some brain, and one person needs some heart there. And so what do they do? And I've never thought about this, but this movie is the temple model. Let me prove it to you. Right, they have to go to the sacred place. Where's that? Emerald City. And when they go there, they're going to meet with the spiritual authority. Who's that? The Wizard of Oz, right? And then when they get there, what are they told? Well, you got to go get the witch and you got to bring this broomstick back and then, you know, maybe you'll get some things, and they go out and do all of that. And when they come back, what do they discover? The wizard is really just some guy behind the curtain, right? And it was a whole bunch of smoke and mirrors. It wasn't what it was portrayed to be. And then what do they discover? They already had it. One person had courage, and one person already had a brain, and one person already had heart, and Dorothy had the ruby slippers that could take her back to Kansas. Why she wanted to go back to Kansas, I don't know, but that's part of the movie. And if you're from Kansas, I apologize. And just so you know, I'm from New Jersey, so what am I talking about, right, originally? But they already had what it was that they needed. They didn't need to go and do anything. They already had it. And Paul, in a similar kind of way, tells us that we need to realize what we already have. Like what? What Jesus already did. And do we think that we can add anything to this? Here's what he said. I'm just going to read these verses for you. It was before your eyes that Jesus Christ was publicly portrayed as crucified. He's saying, isn't that what made you right with God? And isn't that what is ultimately going to lead you forward? Is the gospel. It is grace. You were lost, but God came to your rescue, and he loves you not just in that moment that you say yes to him. He also loves you after that point in time as well. But the minute we add something to that and we say, no, there's a whole bunch of things we need to go and do so that we can earn our way into God's good graces and earn more of his favor, it is as if Jesus was put on that cross, and maybe you're familiar with among his last words, and it tells us he shouted them out and he says, it is. But what Paul is saying is that you know what you're putting into Christ's mouth? It is pretty much mostly done. Now it's up to you. Good luck. He says, that's not it. Jesus died for you. The love of God was on display for you. You think that you can add something to that? And somehow you need to work to make yourself right or more holy in God's sight in that way? That's not it. What have you already been given in what Jesus has already done for you? And he also says, you know, we need to realize what we already have, what we've already been given. And he talks about receiving the Spirit. And he says, did you receive the Spirit by works of the law or by hearing with faith? And remember, in the temple model, where is the presence of God? It's in that sacred space in the New Testament. After Jesus died and rose again, where does the Spirit of God reside? Inside of people who have put their hope and trust in him. We have to go to the sacred space where the presence of God is. That is sacred. And in the New Testament it says, and that's in you. And did you receive that by doing anything, or did you just receive that by receiving the grace of God? And now you think you can add to that? You can perfect that? You already have it. The Spirit has been given to you if you have said yes to Jesus, and also realizing what we've already experienced. And he talks about, you know, all the things that you went through, did you go through them in vain, if it was in vain? He's pointing back to their experiences, saying, remember the things that you experienced. How did you get into a relationship with God? It was his doing. How was your marriage maybe put back together? The grace of God. How did you find sobriety in your life? Did you do that all on your own? It is by the grace of God. So was all of that just for nothing, and now it's all up to you? He says, just look back. And you can see God at work in all kinds of different ways. And that was because of his grace, not because of your effort. Do we participate in things like that? Sure. But it is a response to God's work and God's grace and God's power that not only rescues us, but also transforms us. And what we have and what we need has already been given to us. So first, power to change found by realizing what I already have. Secondly, by recognizing the just try harder fallacy, right? Because basically the message was just get more serious. Now, it's one thing to talk about this and these teachers who came in and we say, well, that was 2,000 years ago. Does that thing still exist? Can I just tell you, in part of my own journey, I bought into the temple model for a while. I grew up around church, left it for a while, and then thought I had it all figured out, found out that was far from the truth. Came back, put my hope and trust in Jesus, began this journey. Then I eventually went to school to study doing what I'm doing right now. And when I was there, there was a group of people, and I began to talk with them a little bit, and they said, yeah, you know, there are some people just playing at the spiritual thing, but there are some of us, we're pretty serious about it. And if you want to be serious, you would be with us. And there's something there that's attractive, right? Because who doesn't want to transform and change? Who doesn't want to become more spiritually mature? Who doesn't want to move ahead in their spiritual life? And the promise is, you do these things and you will. And so over the course of about a year, decided, well, you go to that kind of church, not that kind of church. And here's how you structure your day. Here's how much you read of the Bible every day. And here's how much you study. And here's how much you journal. And here are the things that you do day by day. And you know what the net result was at the end of that year for me? Something called self-righteousness. Feeling really good about myself spiritually. Prideful. I did it. Working hard. Getting it done. And the other thing was becoming judgmental. We're doing really well. Those people, they're not very spiritual. And where is the focus in all of that shifted to? It shifted to right here, hasn't it? And all of a sudden, the Jesus who was crucified before your very eyes and the grace that has come to your rescue, well, that's good and that's nice, but now I'm doing better than you. And that leads not to spiritual life, at least a spiritual death. And yet I think many times people wrestle with these ideas of, hey, look, I get that God loves me, and I get that there's forgiveness. I get how you get in, but how do you get ahead in spiritual life? If I'm struggling with forgiving somebody, where do I go to get that power, that ability, that understanding that would allow me to do that? Or maybe, you know, for somebody who's struggling with their thought life and saying, I don't want to log on to those websites and I don't want to have those thoughts. Where do I get the power and the ability to be free of that and to get rid of that? And I know I'm called to love people, but I find it really hard, and especially to love certain people, maybe who are politically different than me, maybe who just, you know, make some different life choices. I know I'm supposed to love everybody, but I find it really hard. Where do I go to find that kind of capability? And the promise of the temple model is, we'll tell you, and we'll give you the list.
And if you work really hard, you'll get there. And once you do, you'll be on a higher plane than everybody else. Look at what Paul says. Are you so foolish? Having begun by the Spirit, are you now being perfected by the flesh? And I got to tell you, in my own year's journey in the temple model, that verse right there was like an arrow to the heart, which says, do you think that what God began is something now that you can finish? Are you kidding me? And there was amazing freedom on the other side of that, and much less self-righteousness. Still working on some of that. And also less judgmentalism. But it's really alluring, isn't it? Who doesn't want to move ahead spiritually? Who doesn't want to grow and mature? Everybody, I think, has put hope and trust in Jesus would. So where is it found? And Paul says, don't get your eyes off of what got you right with God in the first place. And it's God's doing from beginning to end. To illustrate that a little bit and how the teachers that came changed the story, I want to talk about another movie here. And this is one of my favorites of all time. Saving Private Ryan. There's something about the courage in battle that is just very moving to me. But anyway, I digress. The beginning of that movie is the D-Day landings on Normandy. And by the way, today is the 67th anniversary of that horrific battle and all that happened there. And the storyline of this is that Matt Damon's character is one of four brothers who three of them get killed in a very short amount of time in the conflict that happens there. And so the higher-ups hear that there's one brother still living, and so they think no family should suffer the loss of four young men in one family. So they take a select group led by Tom Hanks here, and they're going to go find Private Ryan, get him out of wherever he is, and get him back to his family. Most of the story is about that search and all that happens along the way. And near the end, there is this climactic moment where they find him, and Matt Damon's character says, I ain't leaving my brothers. And I'm going to stay with them. And it's just an expression of that camaraderie that is found in such a difficult situation. And so now the group decides, well, what are we going to do? And they say, well, let's just stay and let's see this thing through. And most of the group that was sent to look for him winds up losing their lives in that process. And near the end, Tom Hanks' character gets shot and is mortally wounded. And Matt Damon's character, Private Ryan, comes up to him. And in his last words, Tom Hanks pulls Matt Damon close and he says, earn this, earn it. And then he dies. The last scene of that movie is in the cemetery in Normandy many years later. And now Private Ryan is an older man with gray hair. He's got his family around him. And he's been looking for the tombstone of this guy that Tom Hanks was playing. And he falls down in front of it. He begins to weep. And he says something to the effect, I hope that at least in your eyes, I've done enough to earn what you guys did for me that day. And it's an amazing movie. It's an amazing story. But can I tell you that there's something that is inaccurate about that movie? There is a retired Army Ranger in this group that was searching for Private Ryan. They were Army Rangers. His name was Tom Allen. And he writes that the words earn this made him really upset. He said a Ranger would never say that. The motto of the Rangers is not earn this. It is sua sponte, which means by my own accord. Or literally, I chose this. Tom Allen, retired Ranger in real life, said, if Captain Miller had been a real Ranger, his last words to Private Ryan would have been, sua sponte, I chose this of my own accord. I volunteered. There's no charge. Now you go and you live. And just like that story got changed in the movie, the Apostle Paul is telling us, the story has been changed. by people who say, yeah, God's grace gets you in and his power makes you right with God, but now it's up to you. That's not the story. That what got you right with God is also what transforms you into the image of God. Are you so foolish? The having begun by the Spirit, are you now being perfected by the flesh? Do we think that what we can do can produce something that God has not done? Paul says, let's not be foolish. And so what gets us right with God also is what transforms us. And power to change is also found by remembering the power of grace. And I don't know if you've ever had this thought where you read the Bible and you go, man, it seems like in the Old Testament, it's 10 commandments and a whole bunch of doing stuff. And then you get to the New Testament and it's Jesus and grace. And it's like God either changed his mind or the Old Testament is against the New Testament. And can I just say, that is not the truth at all. It's the same story from beginning to end. And the teachers who came, no doubt what they said to the people in Galatia was, hey, he told you about Jesus and grace, that's brand new, but we've got the law of Moses, and that's been around for a couple thousand years. What, are you just going to throw that away? And so Paul, in the next part of his letter, says, oh, the law of Moses, I'll do you one better. I'm going to go all the way back to Abraham. He was before Moses. He's the father of our faith at the very beginning. And look what he says. And the scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel beforehand to Abraham, saying, in you shall all the nations be blessed. Before there was the Ten Commandments, before somebody had a Bible to read, God comes and chooses somebody that, as far as we know, Abraham didn't do anything to look in God's direction. God found him and invited him to follow him. And what it tells us in the Old Testament and again in the New Testament is that Abraham believed God and it was credited to him as righteousness. How do people get right with God? They believe him. And God's power saves them. How do they move on in their relationship with him? Same way. Same way. And so if you want to talk about how long the law has been around, it was turned into something that was an effort to earn our way into God's good graces. So Paul, what are you saying? Maybe to summarize, you know, all that we've been talking about, the grace that rescues us is the grace that remakes us. And somebody put it this way, I don't know who said this first, I've read it a few times, that every day we should preach the gospel to ourselves. Because the power to change is found in the love, the grace, and the power of God. But anytime we turn it into our efforts and our earning in any way, it turns into willpower, which will not power lasting change. The same grace that rescued us is the grace that remakes us, the grace that saves us, is the grace that transforms us. The way that we got in is the way that we grow from beginning to end. It's God's doing. And so as we lean into him, recognizing what he has done, these hearts of ours can be made new. I'm going to invite you to bow your heads together with me as I pray. So God, thank you for your great unconditional love for us and the power that changes us. And so God, may we not look to ourselves, but instead may we look to you and all that you have accomplished, and may we not just quickly minimize your sacrifice for us, your rising again from the dead. God, instead, may that spur us on to follow you all the more, to obey you, trusting that you are leading us toward life together with you. And so God, lead us in that direction for your name's sake. And we ask and pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.